ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कथितां पुराणीनां मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अमृत्वाम् अनुसन्धदामि भगवद्गीते रागद्वेषवियुक्तैस्तु विषयानिन्द्रियैश्चरन् आत्मविषयविधेयात्मा प्रसादम् अधिगच्छति रागद्वेषवियुक्तैः विषयान् इन्द्रियैः चरन् आत्मवशैः विधेय आत्मा प्रसादम् अधिगच्छति. After spending the last two verses going through the sequence, beginning with interest in an object. You know, just interest in the object moves to a kind of a wanting it, moves to a desire for it, moves to anger if the desire isn't fulfilled, moves to delusion from the anger, moves to loss of memory from the delusion, and from the loss of memory, the loss of the buddhi, the loss of your knowledge, your clarity, and from the loss of that, the person is destroyed. That's the sequence. So now, we have to look at, what about when that doesn't happen?
It's a disaster.
He says that Shankara introduces this, saying, sarva anarthasya mulam uktam. Having told the mula, the root, right, of all of these anarthas, the calamities, this calamitous sequence, right, having told the mula of that, which is vishya abhidhyanam. Abhidhyanam means, you know, just thinking about, perseverating on an object, the vishyas, the sense object. You start thinking about one, and then you start really liking, they see all the good qualities in it, etc. So that's where it starts. Atta idanim, now therefore. Moksha karanam, idam uchate. He's going to tell this verse, idam uchate, he'll tell this as the moksha karanam, the cause of moksha. That's what will bring about the liberation, so what type of mind is necessary. So he says, raga dvesha. So raga dvesha, this is a term that comes all the time, your raga dvesha. Raga dvesha. Raga are your likes and dislikes. Dvesha, your dislikes. Likes and dislikes. That's how it's easily often translated, just likes and dislikes. Raga dvesha. Raga dvesha viyukta. Yukta means to be associated with, attached to. Viyukta. Disassociated, unattached to, right? Not held by. Raga dvesha viyuktaihi. Instrumentals, plural, like brahmaihi. So by whatever, we have to see by what. By those things which are not attached to raga dvesha. Raga dvesha viyuktaihi. To, whereas. Because now we're talking about what is the cause for moksha, as opposed to what causes this disastrous sequence. Now, two. So two differentiates. This little word, two. It can mean but, whereas. Sometimes we don't even translate it. But the understanding is that now what is being said is being differentiated from something else. Mm-hmm. Like if you say, blah, 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 whereas, blah, blah, blah. That differentiates. Okay, so now here's the two is doing that. So, raga dvesha vyuktahi tu, whereas, vishayan. Vishayan is in the accusative, right? Accusative plural, like raman. Vishayas, or sense objects. The vishayas, or the sense objects. Indriyahi, by the indriyas, instrumental plural, indriyahi. Raga dvesha vyuktahi, indriyahi. By the indriyas which are freed from, which are not attached to raga dveshas, which are not being pulled by the likes and dislikes. So, do you understand? The raga dvesha viyuktaihi, indriyaihi, then charan. Charan is a present participle which we haven't learned yet. Some of us have not learned it. Charan, it means it'll go along with the verb. A present participle goes along. It's an action that goes along with the verb. Like, if, for instance, if I say, singing the song, I walk. I walk to town singing the song. The singing the song is taking place while I'm walking. Right? So that's called a present participle. So here, it means charan, moving. Right? So something is going to be moving. Moving or moving amongst the vishayan charan, moving amongst the vishayas, right? Moving toward charan, going toward the sense objects, accusative plural, so vishayan charan, moving toward the sense objects with indriyas. When in English we probably say moving amongst the vishayas, the sense objects, with indriyas which are not attached to raga dvesha. So you see the first line there? So, charam, we still don't have a verb. Atma vishayhi. Another instrumental plural. So now we have indriyahi, which is your, which is the actual thing, the indriyas, which are free of raga dvesha. Atma vishayhi. This vasha, then vasha is a potential participle. It means which are being controlled by the self. By the self here means by the mind. Atma, by yourself. It's not the Atma. The Atma's not controlling anything. So if something's being controlled or being held, then what are you referring to? Well, the body's not holding the vishayas. Where does the ahankara land? It lands on the body, lands on the mind, lands on the sense organs. So it lands on the buddhi. So here when you say Atma vishayhi, it's held by the buddhi. It's being held by your mind. It means controlled. You have it under the control of the mind. So the sense, by these sense organs, which are free of likes and dislikes, viyukta, free of raga dvesha, and which are being held under the control of the mind, they're in your own hands. So if you were to use this vasha and different forms of vasha, it really means being held. You're holding them. You're in control of them. They're under your control. They're held in your own hands. That's the kind of the metaphor that's often used. So here, atma vishayhi, then what is? Videyatma. So again, the videyatma is the mind, the buddhi, the jiva, the person. The mind is videya. The mind is controlled. It's being held. Right? It's controlled by you. So the videyatma is the one whose mind, sense organs, the person, is under their own control. So that one whose mind is videya, is under the control, is under control, that person moving among the vishayas, so the videyatma, charan, moving among the sense organs, sense objects, with sense organs that are in his or her own hands, right? And which are freed from raga dvesha, likes and dislikes, that person, prasadam adigachati. Adigachati means gains. So your basic sentence is the videyatma, the one whose mind is controlled. Prasadam adigachati, gains prasadam. Prasadam means prashanta, shanti. Has a mind that is not carried away. That mind is at peace. And so here, the whole idea is that it's not a question. We looked at this last week also. It's not a question of pulling the sense organs away from your experience. Because the sense organs, as long as you have sense organs, unless you decide to be dead or live like a dead person, your sense organs are going to be functioning in the world. But do you have control over those sense organs? Can you pull them away from the sense objects? Do you have a choice? Can you direct them toward toward Dharma? In other words, what is directing the sense organs? Is it Dharma, a Dharma, or is it Raga Dvesha? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What we want to be directing the sense organs is Raga Dvesha. What is appropriate action? What is inappropriate action? Not, I want this, I want this, I want this. Right? And so the one who is directed by Dharma, a Dharma, has control over the sense organs and can pull them away from sense objects at will. That's the freedom. Even the example of the tortoise. The tortoise can pull the limbs in at will and put them out at will. We need to be able to do that with our sense organs. We need to be able to direct them in the direction that we want to. When that's the case, then the sense organs are in our own hands. Why is it that we may not be able to do that? It's because the videyatma is not there. The mind itself isn't in your grasp. The mind itself doesn't have a value for the values. You could say like that. The mind itself doesn't have a value for the values. We could say the jignasa is not there. Exposure to all of these things. Jignasa, the desire for to know, is not there. To gain knowledge is not there. That's one possibility. The raga dveshas have not been worked through. The likes and dislikes have not been worked through in the light of your knowledge. Right? And this is going to be true for everybody. Say you come to knowledge, you have a whole slew. You come with a whole slew of likes and dislikes. It's what you come with. That's what you've brought. Those likes and dislikes are now probably more controlling you than you are controlling them. What stops that from being the case is as you gain clarity, you recognize that the source of the ananda that you are seeking doesn't exist in the objects, it exists as my own swarupa, as my own nature. You become clear. Well, as you become clear in that, as the buddhi becomes clear, in that way, it becomes a videyatma. It becomes a buddhi that has strength. When one understands that, in the light of this knowledge, that the shanti of the mind, right, is what allows for the ananda to express itself in the mind, and that dharma and adharma are the guides for shanti, right? Not really pleasure. It's dharma. Dharma is what gives any type of lasting shanti. Until when I get knowledge, then the source of the Atma, the mind just abides in the source of the Atma. But there's a process of understanding that the mind has to go through, which transfers the source of ananda from the world to me, to my being. That transfer is not a transfer in terms of anything physically happening in reference to the creation. It's a transfer of understanding. It's a transfer of assimilated knowledge. And so the teacher and the student have to spend time understanding this, assimilating it, contemplating on it, right? And so that this shift of understanding causes a shift of focus, a shift in my understanding of what is important to me. In one sense, everyone knows what's important to them, and that is ananda. Ananda means feeling that I am at peace, that I am whole, that I am complete, that all is well with me. That's important to all beings. Even animals, it's important to all beings. The problem is not that. The problem is how to get that. And that's where the shift of focus is required. And that requires exposure to the teaching. It requires the mamukshutvam to even have you convert that to jignasa, to have you then have a desire for this knowledge, you know, have a longing for that recognition, to be able to have a mind that's available to put in the time and the effort, the prayatna, so the effort. You know, effort based on shravana, manana, nididhyasana. That's the tapas. You know, we use this word tapas in the Mundaka, they use the word tapas. The tapas is that wanting, that desire, that commitment to put in the mental energy, take the proper effort to understand the truth of the situation. And it's that understanding that shifts the focus. And it's that shift of focus that gives you a buddhi, a wisdom, a knowledge that is strong. A knowledge that can control, an understanding that can control the sense organs. A knowledge that in itself, that knowledge is what controls the mind. It's a natural control. It's the control that is natural to understanding. When, in terms of sticking your hand in the beautiful fire, it's so pretty, you know. The control to not do that is a control of understanding. I don't have to hold my hand. Oh, wait, don't go near the fire. Don't put your hand in the fire. Please don't do that. You don't think like that, do you? Because once you understand the nature, then that knowledge makes you a videyatma. Right? In terms, you have complete the raga dvesha problem of the sense organs in reference to this viyukta. Raga dvesha viyukta is there in reference to the fire. Your videyatma in reference to the fire. You know how to handle it properly. It's knowledge. And the universe is the same way. Right? You understand it, and as you understand it, the mind does not seek pain. We don't run after pain. Animals don't run after pain. We run after wholeness and ananda. So as the clarity increases, because of the mamukshutvam, you have to have enough shanti to even pursue this, to gain the understanding. But if the mamukshutvam is there, it converts to the jignasa. All of these verses are that Krishna is talking about are really meant for the seeker, the one who wants to know. And so for that one, he's telling very, very clearly what this process is. So he's saying, it's the person who has the sense organs under his or her control, because that mind is a videyatma, right? That mind has clarity of knowledge, which gives the strength that allows a person to move among. He doesn't say move away from. Charan means moving among. Moving among the vishyas with your sense organs, with the sense organs under your control, being free from raga dvesha. Sense organs cannot be free from raga dvesha, likes and dislikes, if you don't know the source of ananda. Because that's like asking you to be free of your pursuit of happiness. You can't be free of the pursuit of happiness, you can only resolve the pursuit of happiness through your understanding of yourself as the source. And so the person who has it, that person gains the prasadam, shanti, a peace of mind. So let's look at the next verse.
Prasade sarvatukanam, prasade sarvatukanam, hanirasyupajayate, hanirasyupajayate, prasanna chetaso hyasu, prasanna chetaso hyasu, buddhipariya vatishtate, buddhipariya vatishtate, prasade sarva dukhanam hanihi asya upajayate. Hanihi, brother, hanihi asya upajayate, apasu upajayate, prasanna chetasaha hi asu buddhihi
Paryavatishtate, made up of the upasarga pari, ava tishtate. So there's two upasargas. One is pari, one is ava, one is sta, which becomes tisht, just to break the verb down. Sometimes the upasargas are the little prepositions in front of the verb. You can sometimes, there's usually one, often there's two. Okay, here's an example of two. Pari, ava, tishtate. Okay, paryava tishtate. Okay. Prasade. When there is prasada. It's really prasade sati. It's an absolute locative construction. When there is the prasada buddhi. Means when that shanti is there, when that peace is there. Lack of agitation in the buddhi. Peacefulness in the buddhi. Prashanti. Okay. Prasade, locative singular. When the shanti is there. Sarva dukkhanam. For all dukkhas. Sarva, all. Dukkha, sorrows. Sarva dukkhanam. For all of the sorrows, hanihi. There is destruction. There is elimination, destruction. Hani means destruction. There's the destruction, sarva dukkhanam, of all sorrow. Okay, I'll explain that in a minute. So prasade, sarva dukkhanam, hanihi. Asya, the destruction of all sorrow. Asya, for that person, who has the prasada buddhi, who is that peacefulness, upajayate, is born. I just said there is, but it means hanihi upajayate. It is born. It occurs. It takes place. What does? The destruction of all the dukkhas, of all the sorrows. So when the prasada buddhi is there, that shanta, that peaceful mind is there, there is the destruction of all dukkha, all sorrows is born for that person. Okay? Prasanna chetasaha, for the one whose mind, chetas, whose mind is prasanna, is peaceful, asu, quickly, he, because, asu, quickly, it's an inclinable, asu, quickly, buddhihi, the knowledge, the wisdom, the buddhi, for the one whose mind is peaceful, prasanna chetasaha, in the genitive from chetas, the genitive singular, prasanna chetasaha, he, asu, buddhihi, Paryavatishtate, it remains still, solid, okay. So. Steady. Sta, tisht, means to stay, to remain. With pari and ava, it means to remain stable and in place, like space. So Shankara uses that example, very beautiful example, I'll refer to it in a minute. So this is an interesting verse. It actually, there's some couple of levels to understand it on. As Shankara says, prasade sarva dukkhanam adhyatmikadinam hanihi vinashaha asya yatehe upajayate. Yeti means the seeker, the one who's making appropriate efforts. The sannyasi, the mumukshu, the one who's engaged in this pursuit. For that yeti, right, this elimination of all the dukkhas takes place. So that needs to be understood. It's not that, so Shankara first refers to, what are the dukkhas? Well, there's the adhyatmika. Those type of sorrows are the sorrows that kind of originate within yourself. Sorrows of mind, sorrows of body, sorrows of perseveration, the sorrows of the way that you are thinking about things, emotional sorrows. These are adhyatmika. They're rooted in yourself, whether in your mind or your body or your sense organs. They're centered in you. The adhibhautika are the sorrows or the situations that are brought about by the environment, from the immediate environment to just nature itself. But by the environment. It can be the environment, other people, other things, places, the situation that you find yourself in. Adidaivika are the sorrows, the dukkhas that you have no control over. They're fates. Sorrows brought about by the gods. You have no control over them at all. So these are the three forms of sorrows. Now to understand this, these are the situations in the world that's dividing the world up into three spheres. If I were to cut the world up into three spheres, we would say Now, these three spheres are capable of causing sorrow for you. Right? These three spheres, your body, your environment, and the gods, right, can create situations. They can create situations that are meant to cause dukkha. So that's why it says sarva dukkhanam. All of these situations that are meant to cause dukkha, right? Those are destroyed. So what does that mean? What it actually says, the dukkhas are destroyed. The dukkha is destroyed. The situation isn't going to be destroyed. You have to make that clear, because it's not like, you know, you gain a shanta buddhi, peaceful mind. Now we're just talking at this on this line, we're just talking about a peaceful mind. When your mind is at peace, it's not like the world decides and your body decides, from this time on, I'm not going to give you any difficult situations. Some people actually think that. That's a notion. That is a notion. I've run across this notion. That when the person becomes a Jivan Mukta, let's take it all the way, a person becomes a Jivan Mukta, then the world looks upon you differently, in the sense that now that you are a Jivan Mukta and have accomplished this, there will not be any more difficult situations for you. For your body will from this point on be healthy. Your mind from this point on will be at peace. All beings will be kind to you. And the universe will never get any trouble from this point on. That's not realistic. That's not realistic, and that's not what's meant. But the way we respond to our situations is what really causes the dukkha. Right? It's our response to the situation that causes our mind to experience pain. The situation can be such that it is meant to cause pain for a samsari. And it's meant to cause pain. If your drishti, if your vision is attached to a situation being a particular way, anything being in a particular way, then when this happens, this would be meant to cause you pain. But what if your mind is not attached to a situation or a person or your body or your life being in a particular way? Why will the situation cause you pain? And let me put it in a more positive way. What if you accept Ishvara as Ishvara is? What if you no longer are asking Ishvara to be what Ishvara isn't? What if you're no longer, I would say, unreasonable in your request? You know? Asking what is continually changing not to be continually changing. Asking what by nature grows old and dies not to grow old and die. You know, asking the world to be more secure than it can possibly be, you know? What if we don't require the world to be what it isn't in order for us to be full? Then even though these negative situations take place, that doesn't mean that I become unhappy because of it. It's very important. Because it's not a question of difficult situations not taking place. Difficult situations continue to take place. It's the way I respond to the situation. So here in this first verse, all the first line Krishna is saying, when that prasada buddhi is there, a destruction of all of these dukkhas takes place for that person. Okay? Now, if you read the second line, it says because, with the he, because when that prasanna chetasaha, when that tranquil mind is there, if it's for that person, that then this knowledge, that the secret, remember this is for the yet, you always have to remember the context. This knowledge is being taught to that person. For that person who has accomplished this, prasada buddhi, for that person, this knowledge quickly takes place. This knowledge quickly not only takes place, it becomes rooted, right? Because the mind is in the proper framework, the mind has the shanti, it has the dharma, It has the viveka, vairagya, upariti, tatiksha. It has all of these things. So that mind has become an adhikari. It's got the prasada buddhi. It's got the karma yoga buddhi, right, which gets the prasada buddhi. It's got the kaushalam. And because of that, because of its understanding, it has the it has that shanti. And now such a mind, as it is exposed to this knowledge, becomes quickly rooted. And so Shankara says here, says something that I liked. He says, he takes this word he. Remember the word he means in, it means indeed or verily or because. Often means because. So yesmat tasmat, because therefore. So he says this word he, yesmat. That's how he defines it. He means yesmat. Then he takes the next word, asu. Ashu. Asha means shigram. Shigram means quickly. So he defines it. So because, quickly, the buddhihi, parayavatishtate. What does that mean? Akasham eva. Like space, pari. Space is everywhere, right? Like space, which is everywhere. It remains samantat avatishtate. It remains still in place. Like space. Now, this is it's a beautiful example. So think like this. Here in this room or in this environment, there is space, and in this space, there is much activity. Like say, if you were to walk outside, in the space, there's the wind, right? There's the wind. There's sound taking. There's sound traveling through it. There's activity. People walking through space. In this room, we're all sitting in space. But the space remains as the accommodative backdrop or substance in which all of this is taking place. Nothing happens to it, and it never goes anywhere. It is all pervasive. It's everywhere. Right? It's all pervasive, right? You can't budge it. It is always present as it is. That's the nature of space right now in this room. Okay? And so there's no missing it. It's not like the wind blows and you think, oh, the space is gone. Right? Or people are walking through the room, oh my gosh, the space is being ruffled. Right? So we have jnana nishta in terms of space. Right? Nothing's making you think that the space is, you're not experiencing the space going through any type of agitation or being misplaced. Clear? So there's a nishtha there. Like that, your atma, yourself, is not away from you. Like space is not away from you in reference to your sense organs. Space is not away from you. Yourself is unruffled. It is always present. There is no place where it is not. And there's no possibility of the buddhi, of your mind, losing it. Because those factors that have caused the buddhi to be taken away on a ride, which is the raga dveshas in the mind that run the sense organs. So if you have the clarity now where the raga dveshas no longer control the mind, and so now the mind is in your hands, that mind naturally enjoys, and it's in your hands because of your understanding. That mind now naturally enjoys a peacefulness, and it is that mind that is an adhikari that is available for this knowledge to take place. For that mind, when the seeker is there, is being exposed to this teaching, this wisdom, this vision, lights up like wildfire. Right? And then when that, so he says, this knowledge quickly takes place. One gains, he doesn't just say quickly takes place. One gains this nishta. That knowledge just abides. Because where is it going to go? The knowledge is of who? The knowledge is of you. Where are you going to go? And how far away is the mind from you? So your being is the very self of the mind. And like space is everywhere, solid, and not something that can escape, yourself is everywhere, solid, and nothing can be away from it. No part of the mind can ever be away from you. And so your being there, right, is something that is fully, completely enjoyed by the mind without choice. Without choice. It's not like your mind can say, once you know, and that prasada buddhi is there, oh, I think that I'll take a vacation from myself. You know? There is no taking a vacation from yourself. It's like the pot taking a vacation from the clay. You know? There is no distance or separation possible between the self and the mind. But at the same time, does the self undergo any type of modification or change or anything like that? No. That's why he uses like space. And why in the verse Krishna says this putty avatishtate, it remains. Avatishtate usually means it remains. The putty, it gives the sense of in whatever direction you look. 360 degrees, whatever direction you look, it is there. Remaining as is. Remaining as it is. And that's the experience of the jnani. And so now, for that person, right, there is the destruction, the hani, the destruction of the upajayate, that destruction is born of what? Of all of the dukkhas. Of all of the things to cause that can cause dukkha. Right? The sorrow actually is just one. There's a sorrow is sorrow. But there are many things that can cause sorrow. But now those many things that can cause sorrow, right, aren't there for you. They can be causing sorrow for somebody, but their capacity to cause sorrow for you is not there. Right? Because your mind is rooted in the source of ananda. And let me put, there's another way of looking at this also. Just like if a wind blows rapidly through, or say a raging fire blows through the space, you know, nothing is happening to the space. Whatever is going on in my mind or in the environment, nothing is happening to me. And that's aparoksha. That's my reality. Right? And who's it, the mind that is reveling in that reality, has nishta in the reality, is the one who has brought these raga dveshas under control. The raga dveshas are in the hands of my mind, which because of my understanding. That mind, which now enjoys peace because of that, for that mind, this knowledge ignites in that mind very quickly. Everybody see? Nasti buddhira yuktasya. Nasti buddhira yuktasya. Nacha yuktasya bhavana. Nacha yuktasya bhavana. Nacha bhavayata shantihi. Nacha bhavayata shantihi. Ashantasya kutasukam. Ashantasya kutasukam. Na asti buddhihi. Ayuktasya nacha ayuktasya bhavana nacha abhavayataha shantihi ashantasya kutaha sukham. He says, Shankara introduces this, he says, sa iyam prasannata stuyate. That shanti now, the Lord is praising. He's praising the shanti, how powerful that is in reference to a human being's well-being. Na asti buddhihi ayuktasya. There is no wisdom. Buddhi here means wisdom. Wisdom, clarity. There is na asti buddhihi. There is no wisdom. Ayuktasya, for the one who is not endowed, the Anna gates with this. So it's going to go back to the prasada. Ayukta. For the one who does not have this, is not a videyatma, who doesn't, whose mind isn't under the in his or her hands, who doesn't therefore have the prasada buddhi, okay? For that ayukta, there is no wisdom, right? Because at that time, the mind is going out, saying, I need this to be happy and I have to have this. So at that moment, right, there's total self-forgetfulness. So at that moment, prasada buddhi is not there, then at that moment your knowledge is not there. It's been swept away, right, by the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, na asti buddhihi ayuktasya. Nacha and ayuktasya bhavana, for the one who is an ayukta, who doesn't have that clarity of understanding about the nature of the self, the nature of where the ananda is, for the one who doesn't have that, then there's no bhavana. Now, bhavana is interesting. It can mean meditation. They don't have the ability to meditate, to contemplate bhavana. But it also means how Shankara talks about this, that for such a person, when the mind is roving out here, I want this to be this way, and I need this to be this way, and I want that and that, at that time, the longing to be with myself, to understand myself, to know, to recognize myself, that longing to know myself, to recognize myself as the source of ananda, that longing's not there at that time. Right? You can get it back, but at that time, right, the longing is here. So for the person who's in ayukta, their knowledge is not there at that time. Right? And then when that knowledge is not there, there's the value is not there to be with myself. Because otherwise, when the prasada buddhi is there, the mind, the nature, the mind is actually drawn into, I would say, a contemplative space. Whether your eyes are open, if your eyes are open, you're appreciating Ishvara, or you're appreciating what is. When your mind, when you're in so disposed, just meditating, you enjoy that because the mind is drawn to yourself. The mind is drawn to ananda. Right? When the mind has a prasadam, when it has some shanti, then it's drawn to the fullness of that shanti. So it draws it in. Right? For a seeker, a mumukshu, who has understood the pain of the sense organs dragging you all around toward meaningless, illusory moments of happiness, it's painful. It's a painful thing. You recognize the painfulness of that. You don't want that. You want to be able to be with the situation as it is, enjoying your own happiness, your own ananda. You can love and be helpful to the situation as it is, try to contribute, but the mind's bhavana, the bhavana for the mind, is really that longing, that love for the atma, for the self. And so for the ayukta, that's not possible, because the raga dvesha viyukta is not there. Instead, the raga dvesha is there. So the mind is being pulled out. So he says, so the your knowledge isn't there available at that time, and the bhavana, that being drawn to reveling in yourself, is not there. And then he says, and for the one who is nacha abhavayataha, for the one who's not drawn to the self, reveling in the self, he says, nishantihi, there's no peace. Because you're away from ananda. You need to be feeling the self, you need to be feeling whole and complete. When you're feeling whole and complete, the mind is reveling in that, it's satisfied. There's the shanti. You know? If you're away from that feeling of wholeness, there's not shanti there. Right? And so for the one who's not drawn into that wholeness of the self and that contemplative way of being, no shanti. And then, ashantasya kutaha sukham. For the one who doesn't have the shanti, where's the happiness? Right? So, we all know it. You can be in the most wonderful environment with your best friends, and they can also be loving you. So happy to see you. You know, everything is fine. It couldn't be perfect. And you're miserable. You're depressed in that situation. Not because there's anything at all wrong with the situation. But for whatever reason it may be, internal reasons, something just happened at work, whatever, there could be many, many reasons, but the mind has no shanti. And when the mind has no shanti, it doesn't have any happiness. Right? So it says kutaha. Kutaha means where? Where is it? For the one who doesn't, for the shanti's not there for that person, then where's the happiness? So what we need, you can be in a hellish situation, and your mind's at peace, you have the ananda. You can be in the most beautiful, wonderful situation, you don't have the shanti, you don't have the ananda. Shanti and the ananda goes together. So it says, for the one who doesn't, so you see the domino effect. Mm-hmm. One thing you have to understand it's important in really understanding these verses, for the adhikari, the one who's being now the student, the jignyasu, the mumukshu, the jignyasu, who's now being exposed to this teaching, as one gains nishta, one becomes somebody who is a yukta, not a yukta. And so what do we do? What needs to be done is when the mind is pulled away and you become that a yukta and you're suffering because of it, this is kind of the progression, the mind has to be pulled back. What pulls the mind back? Nothing physical. You don't physically pull the mind back. You don't physically pull your sense organs back. And they don't need to be physically pulled back. You need to bring your understanding to the situation. You need to bring your knowledge to the situation. And that's what pulls the mind back. That's the manana, the shravana manana nididhyasana. And that knowledge, as we mentioned last week also, that knowledge has to be also just the relative knowledge of how to be kind to your mind. Right? It's the knowledge of dharma, adharma. It's the knowledge of the psychodynamics of the experience of happiness. It's the knowledge of the unconscious. It's the knowledge of raga dveshas, subtle likes and dislikes. It's the knowledge of how to not only to include yourself in ahimsa. Right? We think that maybe this is bringing in kind of a psychology, but actually, if all of this is Ishvara, and this body, mind, sense organs is part of Ishvara, just like you are all part of Ishvara, from my vantage point, this entire universe, all of this is part of Ishvara, and there's a value for ahimsa, non-injury. There's a value for Maitreyi. Ahimsa means non-injury. Maitreyi, that means friendliness to all beings. Abhayam is fear, being free from fear, that I may not, let me not cause fear for you, and let me not be afraid of you. Right? Let you not be afraid of me, let me not be afraid of you. These are values, right? And these values need to be directed at all beings, including myself. Not just all beings except myself, all beings including myself. These values have to be directed at all minds, including my mind, you know, at all moods, including my mood. And so as I practice these values and gain a value for these values, if I include myself, every part of this jiva, the body, mind, sense organs, to be a recipient of those values, then all of these things that we teach, like evoke the inner friend, we shouldn't have to evoke the inner friend. In the sense that, I mean, we do, and we do teach it, and it's very important that we teach it. But when you really think about it, if there's a value to be kind to all beings, it's not a value that says be kind to all beings except toward yourself. You know, love all beings Don't be critical, be understanding. Try to understand all beings, but don't try to understand yourself, you know. That's not the teaching. And if you put it that way, it's really obvious, you know. It's really, really obvious. So we always have to, as we gain a value for these values, we have to also be the recipient of that, of every one of those values. And there's a reason for all of those values, because every one of them, without exception, gives shanti. It's the Dharma. These values are the Dharma that give shanti, peace to the mind. You know? The problem is that if we have a value for the values and that value doesn't include us, then I can have a value for the values and then become, for instance, very critical of myself because I haven't practiced that value properly. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, there's no end of the accusatory mind. There's no end to the accusatory mind. Becoming conscious of it. And that's why in the previous verses, quite a ways back, Krishna said, you know, you have to have that samatva buddhi toward success and failure, and toward both success and that sameness, that prasada buddhi toward both success and failure, and Shankara in his bhasha said that even includes your ability to be successful at your practice of samatva toward your success and failure. He says it. He says that. That's such a wonderful thing. And when we explain it and you think about it, the whole thing is so simple. I mean, this isn't something like you would say, can you imagine what I'm just talking about, how including yourself, somebody saying, oh, really? That doesn't make any sense. I don't understand that. I think really I should be kind to all beings and really unkind to myself. That's what really seems logical to me. I don't think so. I think even though we may not have brought it to consciousness, as soon as it's said, you can't believe that we've overlooked this. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Something so simple, and yet we do overlook it. And we overlook it because when you're brought up from childhood by your parents in the situation that you find yourself in, and the child doesn't have a discriminative buddhi, not until around 7, right? Mm-hmm. That means all of these experiences from the parents are just interjected. And what does that mean? That a superego, using psychological lingo, a superego is formed, which is that judging, that conscience in the child that is commenting on your behavior, on your commenting on your feelings, commenting on your choices, commenting on your day-to-day activities. And say you have a critical parent, you'll have a critical interject. Why did you do that? Why did you do that? You're so stupid. What if you have a parent that says, you're so stupid. I can't believe that I've ever had such a stupid child. And that's terrible, but it happens. It happens. Okay, so.
What's now, the right mom?
You had a good mom. Okay, so now, say you had a parent like that, you know? Then what does the little child grow up with from childhood? Oh, you're so, when you do something, oh, you're so stupid. You shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have done stupid. I'm so stupid. So that's what we mean interject, right? And so now, this type of a voice, if this is what's taking place from childhood, the adult doesn't even necessarily, it's not, I mean, very often, not even conscious that there is this voice going on inside. Because you don't even know that anything differently. You don't even think about how you're talking to yourself inside. You don't even think about it. When somebody points it out, then you'll think about it. But often, unless it's pointed out, the way you talk to yourself inside is so kind of automatic, unconscious, that it's nothing you've even ever noticed because that's been your environment. See what I mean? And so now when it's brought into consciousness, and then say if I were to ask, would you talk to another person or have a value for talking to another person in the way that you talk to yourself? If you can say, the way I talk to myself is why, the way I want to talk to all beings. The way I treat myself is the way that I want to treat all beings. That is perfect. That's how it should be. And if you treat yourself, these the inner characters, the way what goes on in your mind, if you treat yourself in that way, then you can, with integrity, treat others in that way. Right? Because otherwise, if you don't treat yourself in that way, you've set up an unconscious dyad. There's the mean one inside and the victim. There's the persecutor and the victim inside. And so then when the persecutor and victim are is in a relationship that you have, then what you're going to be faced with is in your relationship with others, the person will be the victim or the persecutor. When they're the persecutor, you're the victim. Right? When you're the persecutor, they're the victim. That's the dyad inside. And so this dyad, as this dyad is changed to, you know, I understand myself as I'm kind to the ones inside. When I make a mistake, then I come to my aid. If I do the wrong thing, I process it with myself and look how I could have done it better. So we can learn. But there's kindness there. Now that's the dyad inside. If that's the dyad inside, then when somebody makes a mistake, the part that wants to help the situation is there. Right? When you make a mistake, you don't project also the persecutor on outside. It's very kind of very helpful to kind of understand the nature of psychology. Mm-hmm. You know, so that you can gain more and more it will make more and more logical sense to you to give a lot of care and love to all of the process of growth that's taking place inside and all of the different parts. That allows you to do it outside. And that means then that's a real karma yoga. It's a prasada buddhi, because your ability to do that gives your buddhi, your knowledge, a natural samatva, a natural shanti, because you are the one who is dealing with the parts of your mind that are growing or hurt or in problems. That one is kind. That kind one has shanti. So now the shanti is holding the ashanti. So all of these things are so important to understand, because we're living in Kali Yuga and there's a tremendous amount of pain. Mm. And a dharma in the world and in our society and in our family life. You know? Layers and layers and layers and more than one century of it, and more than one generation of it. And so now we have to unwind this adharma or these causes, this kind of our generational way of being based on ignorance that causes pain. So we have in our unconscious a lot of ways of being that have caused pain. But all of this has to be understood and brought to consciousness so that we can unravel it. And it's all based on understanding and knowledge. So that then we know how to be with others, but we know how to be with ourselves. You know how, really, if you know how to be with yourself, then you do know how to be with others. You don't know how to be with yourself, then others will be suffering in the same way that you are suffering internally, because that's what they'll also be getting. You know? So it's very beautiful to understand. So,
did Shankar make that unfold?
It's all there. Let's take a moment.
Thank you.
It is all there, honestly. For one who knows, you see it there in what Shankara says. It's very clear. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnam Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.